Next is an excerpt from Questions and Answers, recorded on June 9th, 2000, in Wicklow, Ireland.
I'm going to read this other question I thought was an interesting one for everybody. It's not just for one person. I've been sometimes my past life pops up in my mind. Sometimes I feel embarrassed and ashamed, and sometimes distressed of my life prior to coming to Krishna consciousness, and even some experiences I had as a devotee. It's like there is a personality within me I wouldn't like to show or share with anyone. Sometimes I wonder, should I try to deal with it somehow in order to finally get over those impressions in my mind? One obvious worry is, how will those impressions affect me at the time of death? Is it sufficient to continuously try to put these things out of my mind, or is it necessary to deliberate over them in search of release? And if so, what are the processes? I think it's not... I don't think we can get rid of these things by trying to repress them. The different things that we did, at least as I understand what this question is about, I'll try to answer it. The things that we're ashamed of, that we've done in this life, especially before we were devotees, or maybe even as devotees. We're ashamed because we have a certain image of ourself and a certain image that we present to the world now as a devotee. And if people were to know, they said, the dirty things that go through our mind, or even that we did, it would be devastating for that image. So we try to hide it, even from ourself. I'll try not to come off as a psychologist here, but think in terms of the devotional process for it. So I think when it comes up in the mind, well, we have to face it, but first of all, we're encouraged to think of the mind, not my mind, you know. The mind is chanchala, it flickers and thinks of this and that, but I'm not the mind, I'm not the body, and I'm not the mind. So that's just my mind, or rather, that's just the mind doing its usual activity. And or if even if I admit that I did this or I did that, that's just one, that's not my whole personality. That's just something that, especially if it was before I came to Krishna consciousness, oh, that's standard for Kali Yuga, that I did different things and I was so much in darkness, and by the grace of Prabhupada and the Krishna consciousness movement, now I don't do those things anymore. But if they come through my mind, I can understand that that's not who I am. That's just something that I did, and I don't identify with that. It's just a very small aspect of my existence, whereas actually I'm a pure spirit soul, and now I'm a practicing devotee. I think if we face it like that and think some with Krishna conscious thoughts toward it, then we don't have to be afraid that such things pass through our mind, or that at the time of death, and we'll have to pay for it then. The the thoughts are small, and the experience of Krishna consciousness is vast, and Krishna is also very forgiving towards us, and that there's no need to try to keep a false image before in front of him. He knows all that we've done in many, many lifetimes, and still he forgives us. But if you continuously try to put these things out of your mind, it won't work. They'll come back. But rather than you can see it, not try to enjoy it in a perverted way, but just say, oh, that these images of what I was, but they can't hurt me now. I was sometimes think in my mind of these things as, use the word ghosts, that, but in a special way, although there are such things as ghosts, but I would think of them as things that aren't being fed anymore, like we refers to also as skeletons in the closet, it's an English expression, or ghosts that aren't being fed. We were talking yesterday about how to feed doubts, or how to starve doubts by feeding faith. So these things that no more energy is being put into, these dirty things, they have no more potency, and they'll soon just completely go away, like dust, or like anything that gets starved to death. They'll become like corpses. And then you can just clean the place up and throw the corpse out. But if you let it, let it feed in some way, and then we said thinking leads to feeling, leads to willing. So then you'll be doing it in the wrong way. You'll be thinking, yes, I used to, whatever it is, say, I used to smoke marijuana. I used to smoke and it was like this, and it was like this. Or I used to have this kind of sex experience, or I used to do this. And then you're just agitating yourself towards doing those things again. But rather, we do it from the devotee viewpoint, that I used to do that, but I'm embarrassed that I did that. Krishna, please forgive me, and I just want to stay in your shelter. And not going back to try to squeeze some more enjoyment out of it again. But just to be afraid of it, in a sense, afraid of Maya, not dwelling on it. But if it comes to you, then using the weapons of Krishna consciousness and turning to some good activity in Krishna consciousness, you don't have to be overwhelmed by it. And don't... be embarrassed that you were dirtied in the process of coming to the material world and going through the going through life in the material world. That's what it is. It's a dirty place for dirty activities. But now I'm not part of that. And this isn't just mental. But we have to be very careful about our activities too, so that we don't associate with people and places where these activities are done, but stay with the devotees where the activities are Krishna conscious. Go to the holy dham, go to, live in the temple, or read Prabhupada's books, and engage in Krishna consciousness. So before I go on to any question, from one question to another, I can ask anyone if they want to comment or make a further question on that. Yeah.
Can I make a comment on the previous question?
Yes.
Because I was thinking that we're looking for results in terms of becoming people and people making joining and things like that. But should we also be encouraged by the fact that, for example, I recently saw a survey that, twice I've seen this, different times, just a genuine sort of survey where 25% of the population now believe in reincarnation.
Hmm.
And there's a lot of people out there that they're developing a sort of a degree of sort of consciousness, but I don't know if it's not necessarily Krishna conscious, but they're becoming more and more aware of spiritual life. And for example, even like just in Dublin, we were just on our way in, there was a shop that said, Ayurveda remedies and things like that. And just sort of more and more people are becoming aware of the culture of Krishna consciousness and spirituality, and that maybe is a direct or indirect result of the preaching that's been going on. And should we also be encouraged by that and see that as more and more people becoming vegetarian? And
kind of a infiltration of the mass culture. Be encouraged. How about the second question? Oh, you want to say something?
About the first question, just when you started to answer us with about the first question, you mentioned how you had been a student under Prabhupada's care in New York, and then although you were still a fledgling student, you were sent to Boston to take up the preaching there, and you had many misgivings. Somehow intriguing to me to think about that. It's kind of a unique circumstance that someone's sent completely alone into a, like Gurudakshin Prabhu's just mentioned, that nowadays we've got Ayurveda on the high street, and there's kind of all infiltration that's going on and it's gone on. But then there wasn't really anything like that. And I was trying to think about how that would have felt for you, and how you actually got your encouragement to go ahead and do that.
I don't think now is so much the time for that. I wrote about some of that, I think, in that book, The Early Days with Prabhupada. But I wasn't an outgoing kind of person. I'm still not, but I remember he was going to go to India. He was ill, and I was going to go to Boston. And so one of the last exchanges I had with him, I went into his room, and I said that I was going to go. And I bowed down in front of him, and he went like that, rubbing my back. And I think that was a source of at least a year's encouragement. I was able to put up with things in Boston. Mm. We had something too, though, analogous to what Guru Dakshina is mentioning, was the what is now called the counterculture, and which was still prominent then, and Hare Krishna was seen as somehow connected to it. So Indian gurus, Maharishi, and the Beatles, and things like that, was all, there was something, some frame of reference I could try to remind them about. But it was certainly hard, as I was all alone in the city, and there was nobody to say, okay, we're going out now in Sankirtan, or we're going to go out and distribute books, or, and for a few weeks I did some things just by myself. Even knocking on doors in Harvard University in the dorms and trying to speak with two people about it, about this thing that's going on in New York City. Somebody gave me the name of a student who had sponsored a visit to Harvard of Krishnamurti. He's still a popular philosopher, mystic of India, even many years since his passing away. And so I went and saw him. And I'm having some intensive talks with him. And he was under the influence of Krishnamurti's impersonal philosophy, and perhaps for the first time hearing Krishna Bhakti, as I was telling him, over the different arguments and examples that I'd heard from Prabhupada. So that was good, to be able to do that. I remember at one point in our talks he said, well, it sounds like your Swami, that sounds like the difference between he and Krishnamurti is, how did he put it, that he's a devotee or something. And anyway, I can't remember right now, but it was hard for me. And then some devotees came down and joined me. Okay, let me read this one. This is, it's a little contained in the letter. Prayer. Prabhupada so often gave the example of the Christian prayer, "Give us our daily bread," as an illustration that we don't pray for material things, but rather accept what God gives, be grateful for it, and simply serve Him. It's true that Prabhupada would poke fun, we can say, at that prayer. But he would often also say that Hindus go to the temple and they pray the same thing. Oh goddess Durga, you know, give us this, give us that. Everyone is going to pray to God and ask us, and asking for something material. Because when I started, I didn't know much about Christianity until I came to Krishna consciousness, and then began to read some of the saints. And I remember reading in a number of times in Teresa of Avila and others, when they describe this prayer, "Give us our daily bread," they're referring to asking for bhakti, or love of God. They don't mean that they're asking God to give them bread, because they already know. Just as Prabhupada would say, they would also say that there's no need to ask God for bread. He's already giving that. We're praying, please give us love of God. So it's not necessarily that we have to make fun of the Christian prayer, but any prayer where the person is praying to God just for material goods. Be grateful for it and simply serve Him. But at the same time, we know nothing is possible without Krishna's grace. When I pray for help in finding a desire to serve Krishna, help in hearing the holy names, determination to continue in devotional service, help to find feeling in spiritual life. So this is good. Rather than pray to God just for some food, which he's already giving to the elephant, and as Prabhupada was the elephant and the gorilla and all these different creatures, they don't pray, and God gives them food. So she's saying that she wants to pray for these other things, which I think are good. These are good prayers. And she's developing the question, how much do we need to ask for this, or how much can we just do it with our own self-will? help to find feeling in spiritual life, that it is not just a way of life that I got used to, so now I just continue the motions because I can't be bothered to change again. I thought that was quite a line there. I think I'll remember that one. You've come to Krishna consciousness. Like I've been in Krishna consciousness so many years, and what if I decided now, well, I think I'll be a Christian instead. I think I'll quit this Hare Krishna movement, and a 60-year-old man. I said, no, I don't really like Krishna consciousness, but it would be too much of a hassle to change. So I'll just keep poking along rather than convert to another religion. So it would be it's pretty obvious that that would be awkward for me, but for a 20-year-old or less person, you might just consider that perhaps this isn't for me. Perhaps I should change again. Or if you've already been seeking different spiritual paths and have come to Krishna consciousness, you may decide to stay. So I'll read that again. Help to find feeling in spiritual life, that it is not just, that it not just be a way of life that I got used to, so now I just continue the motions because I can't be bothered to change again. I see the need for a deeper feeling of wanting to be a devotee in my life, wanting to make an effort into that. I ask Krishna to help me, because without recognizing the need for improvement, improvement doesn't happen of its own accord. I ask Krishna because I don't really know how to find these feelings by myself. I think these are all good prayers when we pray, give us this day our daily bread. What we really act, we don't pray for that, for food, but pray for these things actually. At the end, Clara says, this is not so much a question but more of a topic I'd like to hear about, the balance between complacently expecting God to provide everything and self-importantly depending on ourselves without Krishna's mercy. There's a certain fervor that we'd like to have in our devotion, and we maybe don't feel it. A feeling of wonder or appreciation at life, and especially spiritual life. And when it's not there, we feel very disappointed. We were talking about this yesterday. How devotees may feel some of this when they first come to Krishna consciousness, and then later it may seem to go away. But we hear of the great devotees that they always were in that state. And but devotional service is also something that's done, and there's the three modes of nature. It's done in the mode of goodness, and then above that, in the pure goodness. And experiences in goodness are not like experiences in passion. They're certainly not like experiences in ignorance. Ignorance is mostly just sleeping, intoxication. But I think we have to be willing to live a peaceful life, and make regular practice and make regular progress in Krishna consciousness, with awareness that Krishna is with us, and not always seeking some peak experience, like is more identifiable with the mode of passion. What I mean is, We don't have to. We should never stimulate ourselves artificially, and think that that's spiritual life, and that unless we have having some experience like that, that God isn't present in our life. But we should learn to see Him all the time, even in little things. I'm just reading in the Bhagavad Gita, the 10th chapter, where Krishna is describing how He can be seen in the taste of water. Well, that's the 7th chapter. But how He can be seen in all these different things, even in the material world. And we can pray to whatever the prayer means. We can ask Krishna to help us in spiritual life. I guess the summary of this answer or comment on the comment is that certainly we can pray to Krishna to help us in our spiritual life, and don't think that comes about by our own doing.